Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Well, good evening, folks. You're so glad you tuned in tonight to this week's version of Raising Expectations. And we hope we're going to be able to lift your expectations tonight, give you some more hope. We realize that through a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, boy, all things are possible. And life becomes exciting. You know, when you don't know the Lord, it's like being an unsharpened pencil. There's just no point to being around. Heard that from Billy Graham, and I never forget it. So as we start in tonight, we've got a great program for you. We've got some special guests. You're going to see them in just a few minutes here, and we'll be ready to roll. We always introduce who we are. Again, you know, I'm Pastor Joe Schofield, and it's a pleasure to know a lot of you, but it's really a greater pleasure to introduce you to our co-host team, some of the greatest people you'll ever meet in this world. They bless my life, as I tell you each week, because they are a godsend for me. I want to introduce you first across the nation. Our team covers and spans the nation. We begin on the West Coast in Lompoc, California. I got it, guys. Did you see that? Lompoc, California, near Santa Barbara. We have Dr. Paul Hall, who is a retired pastor, a theologian, a professor. He is loved by countless people, and he's been my friend for over 50 years now, and we're both only 39, so that's really something to pull off, isn't it? But you're going to enjoy getting to know Paul more each week. He is a theologian who theologues all weeks. We get the benefit of those theologues, and you'll see what we're talking about in just a little bit. Glad you're here, Paul. Love you, brother.
It's good to see you.
All right. And also, as we go to the East Coast, that's all the way to my right, as we head from across the nation, we go to the state of Georgia. They're in Dalton, Georgia. We have Stephanie and Dr. Craig Thayer. Stephanie, as I shared with you last week, is a health and wellness coach. She's an entrepreneur, a business leader. She is a first-class all-American Christian mom. She's got two great kids, what a story. We could tell some great stories about those boys. They are top of the line. And one just turned 16. We were excited about that, cheering you on last week. And you're still with us. You made it. That's great. Amen. And Craig, Dr. Thayer is a specialized surgeon. He is one of those trauma guys that there's an accident. He knows how to take care of you. And he's the one I want to take care of me if anything ever happens. Besides that, he's also a nutrition specialist, just like Stephanie. And they team up. I don't want to sound corny, but I tell you what, they are the dynamic duo. When it comes to your health and relationship with Christ, they're the two people you want to talk to. So if you're anywhere on the East Coast, you get a hold of the Thayers. You can find them on our website. Find us all right on there. Click on there and communicate with us. So then when we come back from Georgia, we go to Central America, which is the great state of Texas. In fact, we have not only our guests from Central America, Texas, tonight, but we have the illustrious Pastor Ron Greer, who is our friend. He's a great guy. You're going to love getting to know Ron. Ron has done just about everything in life. He's a speaker. He works with the man in the mirror. Paul and I tried that. When we looked in the mirror, we scared ourselves, but somehow he gets away with it. He works with man in the mirror, builds the discipleship of men, and grows them to be, hopefully through Christ, all they can be for their community, for their children, for their families, but most of all to walk with the Lord. Ron's a great man of God. We love you too, Ron. We're glad you're here. All right. So that's our team. Pretty diverse and fun group of people. We have a great time. Now let's go stay right in the state of Texas where we are. And we have one of our favorite guys in Texas coming back. And it was by your request. We have with us Pastor Will Hobbs from Midland, Texas. He's associate pastor there at Kelview Heights Baptist Church. followed Will for many, many years, had the privilege of working with him. We did some great things together, didn't get in trouble too much of the time, just enough so they couldn't find us. But Will and I had a great time. Will is doing a wonderful job there, and he has a special gift. So what we're going to do tonight, because we want to talk about, of course, lifting our faith up in Christ and realizing God's with us and how that fits into all of our lives in so many different ways. But also, we want to talk tonight about one of the things going on in our nation is, as you could tell, what's the inflation, the cost of things going up? What does oil have to do with it? How does oil fit into it? And what are some of the things that we're learning that most likely may not be correct or may come from a political slant, which may not give the greatest insight or wisdom? We want to know what's going on for three reasons. One, so we can really pray. Two, so that we can make a difference in helping others. And three, so that we can thank God for knowing that he's in control and he's got this thing taken care of. So I want to introduce you. We want to give the famous welcome, which we're still waiting for our special drum and applause track, but don't worry, it's coming. In the meantime, we're not worried. Stephanie's back with us tonight. So Will Hobbs introduced Jerry to us tonight, and let's welcome Jerry and Will to Praise and Expectations. Good to have you here, gentlemen.
Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it. Yeah, good to be back on here again. Joe, thank you so much. All the co-hosts, love you guys and glad to talk with you this evening. It's awesome. Yeah, I've got my buddy Jerry West. So we go to church together, met him. Great man of God. He loves Jesus, a good brother of mine. And we've done some discipleship ever since. Oh, and here's my daughter has to find her way to sneak her way on every night.
Right.
I did not put her up to this. But, go find mama. And so he works in the oil. Of course, we live right in the middle of oil, right in the Permian Basin in West Texas, but he works in oil, and that'd be great to bring him on and just look at this question of oil. What's really going on? Cause a lot of people think there are price inputs and things that affect the oil market when maybe they don't. A lot of times people aren't aware of things that really, really do affect oil markets. And they're just unaware completely. So I wanted to bring him on where he could speak a little bit to this issue, answer a few questions. So, Jerry, if you want to, yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself to us and tell us a little about yourself. I guess your family as well. You've obviously got your wife's name on there, Brandy. But so his wife's name is Brandy. Y'all know that.
No,
already.
I didn't. I just noticed that.
No, you're good, man. No, tell us a little about yourself.
We just noticed it
buddy.
Also. No one saw it.
Yeah, you're good.
Well, Brandy's my first wife, but my only wife, but my first wife. Yeah, so thanks, guys, for having me on. I hope I could answer some of you guys' questions, hopefully, intellectually. But my name's Jerry West. I've lived here in Midland for about 8 or 9 years now. I've got a beautiful family, my wife, Brandy, and then two children, a son that's 9. He's at a baseball game right now, and then my daughter that's 6. So I believe I'm going to plug this. Will discipled me 7 years ago, right when we first kind of got established in our church at Kelview Heights. So anyways, he's been a great friend. And anyways, he's done so much for me and my family.
Amen.
We're forever indebted to him. So
amen. He's a good guy.
So this was the first stop after the retirement from L.A. Lakers, or is this?
That's right. I wish. I don't believe I would have landed in Midland, Texas.
Had that okay. All right. That's a second career path, I thought.
I'm a Dallas-Fort Worth guy, so I'd probably be close to that.
I'm sorry. That was an old guy joke. Sorry.
We were talking about it, too. Paul and I were. Yeah. I mentioned it to Jerry. That was good, Ron.
Two-handed, underhanded free throw.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
A lot of my friends call me the logo. My nickname is the logo.
Yeah. Oh, so
Jerry works with Delek. I don't know if you guys know who that is. Delek is. If Jerry, you want to tell us just a little bit about that and what you do with Delek?
Yeah. So Delek, I work for Delek U.S. Holdings. We're a refining business, a midstream business. We have 4 refineries across the U.S. 2 here in Texas, 1 in Arkansas, and 1 in Louisiana, and I do all the crude oil trading for Delek. So I supply all of our refineries with crude oil, and then also do the trading around the market hubs as well. So
Delek just does refining, not drilling and defining.
That's correct. Refining. Just the refining aspect of it. That's correct.
All right.
So Israeli. Well,
one question is Midland still as busy and crazy and fast as it was?
Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, okay. Yes. It seems to never slow down, you know.
But it's kind of a good thing, I think, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah, sometimes you want the transients to maybe go home for a little while. You run into them at the grocery store and you want to eat with the family, but that's a good thing.
Or Saturday night, you're kind of busy. That's when all the lights come on, right? Saturday night lights, right, Will?
That's Friday night lights.
Friday night lights. Whoops, see there? Yeah. I'm back to college. Whoops.
All day off.
Permian Panthers.
Yeah. Right.
And ladies and gentlemen, you meant transient workers, not transient bums. You know, just the people.
That is correct. Yeah. Yeah, right. Thanks for clarifying. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying.
Thanks, Ron.
Yeah. So I have a question, because I don't know really anything about the oil industry. I just know that if you go work on a ship out in the ocean, you can make a lot of money, and it's really hard work. And people don't last very long. So I feel like the costs aren't really related to the things that we're told on the news, you know? So if you could explain a little bit from your viewpoint, what really is impacting the costs that we see as consumers?
Other than Putin, of course, but
you mean specifically at like the gas pump?
Yeah. What it translates to us, what and why?
Yeah, why does it skyrocket?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the oil market is a very efficient market. So, the fundamentals of the oil market are very interwoven into the supply and demand of global. Different global variables, I guess you'd say. So it's a very tight market. Inventories are low from a crude perspective, from a natural gas perspective, from a flex perspective. You know, inventories across the entire globe are almost always see an immediate impact here in the States. You know, you've got Russia going on and war, which you've got several countries across the U.S.
We didn't hear very much.
Yeah. No, slow again. Let's do that again.
It's that the markets are tight, and then from that point on. Oh,
yeah. So did you guys hear me about Russia?
Not much.
We heard Russia, but nothing else.
Okay, gotcha. So markets are tight. You know, inventories are at, you know, pretty much all-time lows from the crude perspective to a products, which is, you know, your gasoline, jet fuel, diesel, et cetera. And then also from a natural gas standpoint. So any movement, any hiccup in the global supply is going to have a massive impact almost immediately here in the States. Mm. So the Russian-Ukraine war right now, you know, with all these countries sanctioning Russian crude, you know, completely doing away with Russian crude, no longer being markets for that specific barrel, has caused some extreme tightness in the crude market, which almost has immediate effect. So it is, it's just essentially a very tight market. And then, so in addition to that, you have one big thing from a, not just from a production, from a crude standpoint, but from a refining standpoint, with the increased, with the limited amount of natural gas supply on the market right now, natural gas has just exploded, especially in Europe. I mean, prices are at all times high on natural gas, right? So what that is then causing is these refineries to then shut down and stop refining the crude, thus making the products, causing the, exacerbating the shortage in the product yield, because you now have refineries that are offline. Not only do you have, you know, crude that's been taken out of market, you also have refineries that have started to shut down just due to sheer cost of natural gas to run those specific refineries. And then here locally, the crude market is a worldwide market, right? But here locally, there's this push to whether it's, you know, Wall Street pushing these big oil companies, you know, plug in whatever major oil company you want to return cash flow to his investors. So they're basically saying, hey, we don't want you to drill. We don't want you to spend the money that you were spending. We want you to now produce and create cash flow and return that cash to the investors. So you kind of, you have that pressure from Wall Street and their investors and financiers. And so that's kind of a few of the things that are causing the elevated gas prices. And unfortunately, because the market is so tight, one of two things either has to happen. We either have to go into a global recession, or there has to be some sort of demand destruction because the supply is not going to catch up. So whether that's, you know, continuing gas prices to be at $4 to then limit consumption and limit the demand side to where supply can catch up, or you hopefully not, which is everyone is, you know, hoping does not happen, is a global recession, which then will bring on demand destruction to kind of balance the market back out. I know that's kind of a very high level explanation.
No,
I don't know if that answers y'all's questions.
Well, I have two questions based on those, right? So number one, about how much, what percentage of oil is coming out of Russia for us? I mean, 5%, 7%, 10% of our market, how much is that? And number two, can you explain to us why the market is so tight, where any little adjustment sort of impacts everything else?
Yeah, so I honestly don't know that exact number. If I had to guess, it's a very minimal amount of volume that was being supplied from Russia to the U.S. Mm-hmm. I think if you said the U.S.'s consumption was 20 million barrels a day, I think our Russian supply source would be maybe 500,000 barrels of that. I don't have the exact numbers on that, but it's not as drastic as one would think.
Right. Nowhere near as drastic as the politicians want us to think, right?
That's correct. But when you're in a tight market, you know, that is a huge movement, right?
Right.
The U.S. cannot, you know, increase production by 500,000 barrels a day overnight. And especially with the, you know, downward pressure that Wall Street has given these big oil companies to essentially not drill, at least at the levels that they once were. A lot of the drilling today is being funded and done by your privately held companies that aren't held to the same, you know, expectations as your, you know, your majors or your publicly traded companies.
Mm. And why is that market always so tight for in the oil market there?
Well, I would say if you leading up to COVID, it was not a tight market. It was a surplus market.
Okay.
So leading up to COVID, you didn't see as drastic of movement. It's, you know, extreme volatility in crude pricing because there was a surplus. It was a market that was in surplus. But, you know, to piggyback what happened in 2020, with the pandemic, that brought an exorbitant amount of crude oil offline. It was, I can't remember what the actual number was back then in April of 2020, but I want to say U.S. production was hovering around 13 million barrels a day leading up until that point. And then post April 2020, they got down to the 5 million. So you're talking 60% drop in production immediately. And that production just doesn't come back instantaneously. It's not just turn it off, turn it back on.
Right. Yeah.
So then that is leading to this. So that, fortunately, we had a surplus going into COVID. You had demand destruction going into COVID. But now, as we're coming out of this pandemic, we still have this shortage that we're trying to make up from the effects of that pandemic.
All right, so COVID comes around, people stop working and driving, the demand goes way down, they get rid of the surplus, and then when the demand comes back, they can't catch up with that shortage again.
Yeah, and
Okay.
Then piggyback that with what's going on.
Okay. All right. With the Russians have been taken out also. Okay. All right.
That's
right.
Yeah.
And our biggest supply country, Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, is it right that it's other than ourselves is Canada? So a very small portion comes from Russia, but we get a lot of our crude from Canada. Is that correct?
That's right. Not an absorbent amount.
Yeah.
Definitely our largest supplier.
And that's through the pipelines that we've heard so much about.
Pipelines and rail. We still got quite a bit of rail coming in from Canada, but that's correct.
Feel real? Okay.
You have long-term deals and you have, I'll save my opinions on that. I won't voice it on this show.
It's okay to have an opinion. Sure, it's okay on this show. You're the right people.
We're still doing rail?
different show.
Okay. so what's the pregnant prognosis here? I mean, what's your take on the next 18, 24 months here? Or I might say 3 years given the current political climate. But
maybe I can make my comments. There's little that we can do at this point to prevent $100 crude oil, to be honest with you. There has to be some sort of demand destruction. So I would say that we're probably looking at, now I don't think that we can hold, we're already starting to see the demand destruction even today. I think if you took the 4 week average, it doesn't look like there's much demand destruction, but if you take a snapshot of the last 2 weeks, there definitely is. I think we're starting to see that, but I think my personal opinion is, you know, if you equate it to the gas pump, we're going to continue to see $4 gasoline for a little while.
That's the national average? At national average, about four, or are you talking about, and that means six or eight in California?
I'm going to say not in California, like the rest of the real world.
Taxes are involved too.
I honestly don't know. I'm on the crude side, so I'm not sure what the national average is on the product side. But
hey, yes, cigarettes don't cost that much either. It's taxes.
So
exactly. Government plays a role.
Y'all are begging on California. Don't you know that we all just love to throw our money down empty holes? I got to tell you a really funny thing. Just about an hour ago, I got a call from my neighbor, and he said, "Hey, Paul, down at the Exxon station right now, gas is down to $4.43 a gallon, which is about $1 less than you're paying everywhere else." And he said, I asked the guy working, you know, why is it $4.43? Why is it so cheap? Boy, is that great. and the answer was, I don't know. My boss just said, just drop the prices and help these people out for a bit. You know, so you're down to $4.43 at one gas station. And then my neighbor, his name is Packy. Packy says, but you better hurry. There's a huge line going around the gas station. Right. And I'm thinking, you know, the futile kind of thing.
Well, this,
Jerry, go ahead.
This guy makes me feel awful. They misprinted it at the, I drive a diesel truck. At the gas station across the street, and they had, instead of 473, they had it at 373.
Uh-oh.
And I felt it was my duty to tell them, hey, I think your pricing is wrong, but not till after I filled up my truck.
Of course. Well.
So now you're making me feel awful.
You were doing so well then. Doing so well, Jerry.
He just took a nosedive. Let's suppose, you know, I don't know a whole lot about, you know, oil and how all that works and things like that. But I do get a sense sometimes when there's an elephant in the room. Okay. Mm. And if I were to ask, you know, Jerry, I heard you respond to this just a while ago. Let's suppose that the war was, brought to some kind of level point anyway. And let's suppose that the restrictions were pulled off, which I doubt that will ever happen. But let's suppose that the restrictions were pulled off. How long would it take the U.S. oil industry to ramp up to where we could be, I think the phrase was energy independent. And is that even a thought anymore that we could be that way? And how long would, is that a fair question? How long would it take us as an industry, an American industry, to ramp up to where we could meet the needs and of the of our country and other countries? Okay.
I don't know that answer. I would say that based off Ron's comment, I don't think that would happen under this administration.
Right.
I think there's so many pressures from Washington. And also, you know, Wall Street, for that matter, that is essentially telling these guys that we want higher prices for longer. We don't want you guys to go out and produce and drill, because it's incredibly expensive to drill a producing well. Like, you know, you hear all these comments about, well, if you got 3,900 leases that can be drilled, you know, that operators are not drilling on, or whatever the number may be, you know, why aren't they drilling on it? Well, it's $10 million a well, right?
Right.
And then in addition to that, you've got an administration that's not willing to
restrict.
Do what?
Lift those restrictions, right?
Lift those restrictions. And then also commit to saying, okay, if you drill these allotted wells that you have permitted, we will then allot you X amount of more permits, right? And this is my personal opinion. So if I'm a producer, if I'm an operator, that's the ones actually drilling and producing the crude oil, why would I go drill up these allotted permits when I know under this administration and potentially future administrations, I may not have access to that acreage, or I may not have access to those permits 5 years down the road in order to drill. I'm trying to build a business that is a lasting business. And I'm trying to, you know, look 20, 30 years from now, not 30 days from now. Right. So, you know, it would definitely have to take, it would definitely take an administration change. There's no doubt about that. Unfortunately.
Well, another question that raises, now, so the federal government has to grant the permits in order for them to drill. Does the federal government regulate how much you can actually produce per well for a certain period of time, or are you just free to produce as much as you want?
So you have, no, this is outside of my realm, but you have federal land, and then you have state-owned land. So like here in Texas, the Railroad Commission, they're the ones who issue the permitting here in Texas. And there was some talks around, I think it was 2019, 2020, about them actually restricting what was actually being produced on a per well basis. But I don't think that ever went through from the Texas side. I'm not sure, honestly, from a federal level. But most of those federal lands are going to be your, you know, New Mexico, well, your Colorado, New Mexico, North Dakota. And not here specifically in Midland, part of the Permian Basin, but not specifically here in West Texas.
So when Jen Psaki in the White House talks about they have these permits, they can go ahead and drill. Again, that's not something that's going to happen like next week or next month, or they're producing all these barrels of oil.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah.
Wow. If that's the way it looks now, piggybacking with Ron there on that question, it certainly looks like with this administration, you know, we don't even want to think about some of the things. But I have a question. I think a lot of people ask me, can you give us any insight on the reserve? We're talking about the reserve. They hit the reserve big. If we're looking at thinking of a duration of time and this, that, and the other, can you give us any idea how the reserve works down? It gets in Houston, I guess, down there.
Yeah, it's strategically across the U.S. So they did do a major, you know, release of 180 million barrels or whatever it was.
It's just a speculation. I don't want to put you in a corner, but just we got enough to get through the administration, I guess I'm saying. There's enough to hold on to there for a while. People ask me, I say, I really don't know. That's not my area.
I would say that that release has already been priced into the environment that we're in. So it had minimal, if any, impact to the crude markets.
Oh,
so
great. Media impact, though. That's
yeah, exactly.
You're talking a world that consumes 90 to 100 million barrels a day. Right. Wow. And you just released 100 million barrels. Wow. So just very short term relief. And they're you know, from the bearish side of the market, they're doing some things that like the SPR release. They're also doing E15. They're extending that, which is, you know, at 15% ethanol. But unfortunately, that's such a small market that it doesn't have much of an impact anyways. Mm. One thing they're not doing is they're not granting small, which affects our business because we operate small refineries, is small refining exemptions. I'm not a specialist on the reserves, but I do know that release has already been priced in and it just has minimal impact.
Mm. What would that small exemption do for you? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Stephanie.
No, go ahead.
Jerry wasn't done. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're a mom. It's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I have boys, so I'm used to that. Are you back, Jerry? I think the internet went quiet for you.
Oh, I noticed that.
Can you hear me, guys?
He's frozen. So I cut him off when he was frozen, so it was perfect.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Jerry, you're back. You mentioned how not having exemptions for the smaller refineries impacted you. Could you explain that to me?
Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Delek specifically, we have refineries that are not necessarily economical refineries without some sort of exemption, small refinery exemption. It's basically a tax credit. Therefore, and this administration has rejected that exemption for small refineries. Therefore, it has caused a lot of these small refineries to shut down or, if anything, reduce runs, so reduce processing abilities. Delek has elected to continue to operate those and run them at full capacity, but it does have a financial impact to us. And I don't want to speak for Delek, but long-term, it would not be. Beneficial for those areas of the country where our small refineries exist. Mm. I'm kind of skating around it.
Okay.
You know what? The internet.
I hope that kind of essentially they're very.
The internet literally like froze you at the points where you would probably say what we thought you were going to say. So God just covered you. He said, no.
He didn't say anything about that.
That's right. God had it covered for you.
Thank you.
So I guess my sort of take on it is if you don't allow the small refineries, the incentive they need to keep producing, then in essence they stop producing, which in essence you indirectly cut the production of oil or processing of oil then, which if you got your Green New Deal calls for less, like that helps sort of.
That helps them, yeah. That's the countering.
Going to ask the same thing. Is this administration, they're doing that because they really don't want more production coming out of here. But in my mind, that should be a later step. If we want less production of oil, we are oil dependent, then let's work and incentivize for other technologies and different things to come along. We don't just cut it off when that's what we're dependent on, because I mean, it's crushing our neighbors, you know, they can't afford to go to work.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
They can get a Tesla. They don't worry about the gas price at all then.
I do want a Tesla, and he laughs at me. I'm not getting one. They're not big in Georgia.
Today, Corvette announced they're going to come out with an electric car.
Okay, this is
200 miles an hour.
This is a narrow argument.
Hey.
Tesla. I just think they're a good looking car. I don't care that they're electric, whatever. He's had a Corvette forever. And then today they announced that they're going to make an electric one. And I said, are you going to get an electric car before me? Because this is not acceptable.
They're ahead of me. I'm just getting into electric toothbrushes. So I'm there way ahead of me.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you know what's scary to me is, and you think the world, especially the United States, would realize this currently, we're going the way of lithium technology for our electrical power. You know where we get like 90 something percent of our lithium? China. Mm-hmm. So they will be dominant over, you know, the weak link in the chain that we can't. I mean, they destroyed the car industry with not giving, you know, little microfiche flash technology for cars. So what do you think they're going to do with lithium?
Well, on top of the fact China isn't held to the same carbon emissions and pollution and things as we've given them a break on top of that. So that's sort of just piled on top of
that. But Ron, don't you know that if we do it, all the other countries will follow suit?
That's right.
Right, exactly.
What's the matter with you?
It's these discussions, and the more you dig and dig and dig, you realize just how wicked this sort of mentality and philosophy is. You know, from my perspective, high gas prices, it's irritating and, you know, inconvenient for me, but, you know, we can make it work, right? Cuts here and there. But I have multiple relatives, I mean, that live in inner city areas who are poverty stricken, and $2 or $3 just a dollar for a gallon or $2 a gallon is devastating to them. And there's no such thing as, well, buying a more efficient car, because the idea of buying a car, period, is something that's sort of a long-term and sometimes impossibility. Mm-hmm. Hope nobody's watching my family. I have a niece whose car was parked at my brother's house for probably 9-10 months, because it's like, okay, I can't afford to drive it. And if you're in areas where, unfortunately, and it's another satanic thing, the people who they continually elect are people who continuously give them promises about what they're going to give them and do for them.
Sure.
But the very same people are the people who are opposed to the things like, for instance, lower gas prices, because they want them to ride public transportation, which is, in some cases, as expensive as buying gas for them. But it's not designed to benefit them. It's benefiting the folk who are on the other end of it.
Exactly.
So this crisis for some of my relatives has gone from just a simple inconvenience, I mean, to a major crisis.
Yes.
And then you combine with that, which is another horror in my mind, I have nieces and nephews who just stopped working because it didn't make sense to go to work. And then the federal government turns around and give them more money not to work. And it just gutting the work ethic. It's, you know, tearing up communities and families. And so, which is why you see a place like Milwaukee. I mean, just a number of those things have come together to create this disaster where you have now just my zip code where I'm from. They had a 95% increase in gun violence in 1 year, 95%. And that's just the gun violence. The drug overdoses and drug uses had skyrocketed. It's just one thing on top of another. So, you know, when we talk about the impact of gas prices, that's just one aspect of this sort of long line of destruction that takes place. So it's truly a wicked thing. It really is.
And Ron, you know, the other thing that some people don't talk about is it's not just the price at the pump. I mean, we didn't have time to go into that yet, but there's so many, the food that's at your grocery store that got there by a semi that runs on diesel, multiple products that are produced by petroleum, plastics, things like that. Yes. And so that's partly feeding into this. Yes. I don't have the number in front of me. Was it 8.5% inflation this year that they, something like that.
Right.
That's so feeding far into that number.
And I think most people don't. I mean, that's other scary thing. But the vast majority of the population has no clue how the petroleum industry ties into so many multiple things in their lives.
Yeah.
So they just sort of ignore the stories when they hear those things without thinking about, wait a minute, this is going to have an immediate impact on my life, my budget, my family. It's not, you know, this lagging effect. It's, you know, prices go up because I'm going to raise my prices anticipating, you know, this lack down the line by $1.50 a gallon. So I have to raise it now. Otherwise I won't be making money. Just a sidelight. I have a friend that owned a gas station. I was shocked, you know, 20 years ago when I found out the margin he makes on selling gas. It's like he had had this nightmares of selling things in the store. I'm going, forget about the stuff in the store. Just sell the gas. He goes, I can't make money just selling gas. Mm-hmm.
They made
a good living. You brought up the price of the pump. It's always amazed me that an entire city, probably, you know, a state, overnight, somehow everybody at a gas station knows what price to put up. How does that happen? I mean, do they call each other? What are you wearing today? And what's the price of your gas?
I don't know that answer, but I would say that the price of products are set daily.
Yeah.
Right. And your corner gas station does not have a month supply. They've got probably a 18-hour supply.
Right.
And that's why they're constantly going back to the rack.
Well, I was going to say with the short supply. So we moved across the country from California to Georgia last summer, and he drove one of our cars. We have a dog and we have a lot of ammunition, and those two things don't get transported well. Well, Ron here, it's, you know, so we keep collecting more. So anyway, he's driving, and then the pipeline was hacked or something when he was doing the drive. And so he was maybe in Texas, or you might've been to Louisiana. And I said, you have to fill up every half gallon. If you can't get gas, you can't leave that city. So it was this weird situation where in the past, we've always had like 40 gallons of gas at home. We have lots of gas now here to store just in case there's some weird emergency. But when you have that situation, what do? Ron's like, don't tell your secrets.
Don't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody.
It's true. Expect the unexpected, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Well, and Joe, we do Dave Ramsey's class at our church, Financial Peace. So maybe at some point we could do a budgeting, seriously, margin episode. Because when you have no margin in your financial life, inflation is want to use that word. Is really, really bad.
Yeah.
It's more detrimental. If you have a little bit of margin, it's an inconvenience. And so.
Well, you know, I go back to my relatives on both sides. This is probably personal information, but just on my wife's side of the family and my side of the family, just the siblings my age, there's probably 40 people. And on my side of the family, me and my brother under me, the only brother left from now, right, are the only ones our age on this side of the family that actually can be considered middle-class income. On my wife's side of the family, there's only two others out of all the relatives. Mm. So it's you know, inflation is a devastating thing, and you watch them. And that's one of my, and if my nephews could hear this, they would start laughing. Why? Because Uncle Ronnie is always talking about margin. You have to have margin in your life, margin in your finances. You can't just live paycheck to paycheck. And and they always think you're crazy because like, I can't do that.
Yeah,
I can't do that. So they miss one paycheck.
The Bible has the answers. The Bible has the principles.
So we taught FPO, Financial Peace, from Dave Ramsey. We took it. It changed our lives 12 years ago. We've done lots of podcasts about what a mess we were. Our kids live by all those principles. We would teach it at food distribution to lower income families. And by the way, if you are not living within a budget or you don't know where you're at, two pastors recently had Dave Ramsey. So Stephen Furtick has Elevation Church. Michael Todd has Transformation Church. And Michael Todd lives in Oklahoma, not in great areas. And he encourages you have to get this under control. So look those up for sure. It will definitely change your life. Yes, Total Money Makeover.
And I don't talk about this a lot, but we have a very large team that health coaches with us. And we talk about health as all kinds of things, including finance. Yes. And one of the gals was asking me what the first step was. And I said, you have to save $1,000 for an emergency. And then she told me their gas budget, because they're very rural, Northern California, is $1,700. Because they have a diesel truck. It's 45 minutes to get into town.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I said, that is unacceptable. So we talked through, it is killing even just what would be middle class. They can't handle it.
Well, I have my niece who drives 45 to 50 minutes to work and back. The gas is her largest part of her budget. She spends probably about a third or more of her income, but she lives in the inner city. And there are no jobs that's worth anything. So she has to drive all the way out to the suburbs every day, mm-hmm. or ride by. And there's no public transportation. So it's like you get someone like her who says, well, I'm just trapped and I'm stuck. I can't do anything. I can't save if I have to spend it. And it's heartbreaking conversation to have with them because she go, okay, so, where does she cut it from? It's amazing. So the things like that, when they hear gas prices start, going high, she literally cries. Yeah. Because it's like she's trapped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, all that to
say. We'll do that, Will. That sounds good. We'll have a good chat. They're ready to roll with you on that one. That'll be a good one. So I was just thinking back. In fact, you brought up a couple of the questions that Will and I had talked about. It was great. Will, you just hit them. We got just a little bit here, but could you share, if we have a mom in the room, maybe you could bring up a little bit, Jerry, about and Will together, all the things, truly a quick shot, even corn ethanol. I saw the head of the farmers union or a corn union somewhere in Iowa sharing how it's devastating them. And then somebody had the great idea, right, Ron, that they just put that in the gas and spread it out. He says, how we get that to you? He says, we can't even do it. Maybe you have some idea about how it does affect us. Will mentioned some. Maybe you two could give us just a word on that because we're going to pray about these things. It gives us some insight on how to pray. I mean, you're talking about plastic. You're talking about gas, food shipped, right, Will? We're talking about what petroleum is used to create and to make things that we don't even think about. Could you address some of those possibly?
Will?
Hey, Will. Yeah, I wish I had.
Off our head like we talked about. We talked about plastic. We talked about clothing. We talked about fuel getting the shipped, food shipping. Any thought you might have on that, Jerry?
Yeah, petroleum products touch every aspect of our lives. And I don't have the list in front of me, and I would encourage anybody that doesn't know to look up what all petroleum touches, and it would, from your skincare to your tennis shoes to your, we use corn, we subsidize one industry with our food industry with corn, right? And biofuels. But I don't have anything specifically, but I would encourage anyone to look up that list. I would say, I wanted to say this earlier when Stephanie brought this up. I think it's very interesting. I almost think that this environment that we've created is intentional to push another agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a group of people within this country that want high crude prices, because if fuel prices are high, crude prices are high, it shows our reliance on them, which, anyways, I had a good thought, but it's past me. But ultimately, what she was talking about was the transition, and there has to be a transition. It can't be immediate. You have, people in this country that want it to be immediate. They want it now, and this is the effects of that. As you see this extreme volatility in this world, there's, we're still trying to wean ourselves off of coal, right? We've been doing coal forever, many, hundreds of years, you know. And I think as an industry, this entire industry wants that. They want alternative fuels. They want another avenue for, you know, fuel sourcing. But there's just a transitional period, and we know that. And most of these companies out here in Midland and these large big oil companies, they're pursuing that, and they're spending real dollars to pursue that. But that does take time. And when you have this extreme agenda that they have, it creates extreme volatility, which really affects people like you and I, you know. And
Ron saying, yeah. Well, folks, I'm going to jump in here for a second. We have we only have like 4 minutes, so I simply want to say to tell you real quick, with raising expectations, it's your gifts that keep us on the air. And thank you for those that do support a program each week, and we appreciate what you give and how you do support. That address, there's a donation or a gift tab there. If you would go to that and give a gift, I know God will bless you and sure will bless us. We sure can use it. We try hard to keep it all balanced. BBSradio.com/raising expectations. That's it. BBSradio.com/raising expectations. If you'll go there, you'll be able to make a gift donation. We sure will thank you for that. Keep us going. We're the greatest radio TV group there is anywhere. BBS Radio TV out of Woodlands, Texas now. They moved from the West Coast. They miss us, Paul, but not that much. They really enjoyed it in Woodlands, so they're enjoying Texas. And that would help us immensely. Very quickly, guys, we want to thank you. Y'all want to take a second to thank Jerry for being here and Will for bringing your friend with us. Stephanie from a mom's viewpoint.
Thank you so much. It's so interesting. And I pulled up the list. I'm shocked what petroleum touches. Wow. I had no idea. So it's always great to learn other perspectives and what, you know, how things work, because you only know what you know, right?
Amen. Yeah. Amen.
I would say keep up the fight, because we need redundant systems so we're not dependent upon other nations and countries. And
thank you, guys.
And I can only say I appreciate the work you do, because it's an industry. I have a couple of friends who are no longer in the industry at all. They couldn't take it anymore. And they've left. And unfortunately, they were men of God as well. And from my perspective, they don't listen to me, but every industry, and especially there needs to be some light there. And the Lord's shining. And unfortunately, they're not there. But thank you for being there, Jerry. And Will, for pastors who follow my heart and disciple me.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Praise God, man. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, hopefully I cleared some things up and didn't just muddy the waters for you guys.
No, it was great.
My blood pressure's up, but
never claimed to be an intellectual. So I got some very smart guys on this.
I'd just like to take a second just to
about what we got, yeah.
Just to refocus a little bit. You know, Jerry, thank you for what you do. Will, we need godly men in godly places doing godly things every day. You know, that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. I just want to give a thought to a young man, Bishop Evans, who was a Texas National Guardsman who lost his life, 22 years old, and that doesn't get splashed around the media very much, you know. But to be in prayer for his family, the sacrifice that he made in an effort to save a couple of people. Preliminary reports were that they were drug runners, you know, so the irony of it all. Just to pray for our nation, to, you know, the Bible instructs us to pray for those who are in authority over us. Part of the prayer that I'm in, you know, bring godly people across their path to remind them of some things and share some insight, you know, and just keep up the good fight, guys. You know, Texas is a great place. California, there's a bill. One of our brighter light bulbs in our California Assembly has made the proclamation that he wants to see gasoline outlawed by 2035 in California. So, and we're not going to be able to. So, y'all come on out to California. We'll give you a free electric car. Free electricity.
Your demand destruction, Jerry.
Anything you need.
Fire extinguisher. Hey,
thanks, Paul. All right. Yeah, thanks, fire extinguisher. Yeah. God bless you, Jerry. We appreciate you. Bless Brandy,
you,
and your children and your family. And Will, we love you, buddy. God bless the whole family. And we'll be talking to you. You guys are the best. Love everyone on here. And folks, thanks for tuning in tonight. We're going to have to jump off, but we'll be back next week. Look forward to seeing you. Have a blessed week and keep on praying. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy it.
Thank you, guys.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.